Hey everybody, you're listening to Bow Ties in Business. This is part two of upgrading your job search, and we're talking about rebranding yourself personally by upgrading your resume, building out your social profiles in a way that gets a meaningful result as you look for a new role. Michael Glentner is amazing. If you missed part one, links below in the show notes, go catch up with it. As always, I'm your host, Tim Kubiak. If you have a sales challenge that you need to solve, reach out to me. But if you're looking for a job, this episode's for you. Michael shares tons of advice. He's placed over 3,700 people. And with that, we'll get right back to it.
It's because there were tons of baby boomers. I mean, and we didn't have enough jobs, right?
The economy had to grow into the supply of labor.
Right.
Yeah.
Now all those baby boomers are retiring. And we know that the generation out of the four generations now in the workforce, Generation X, which is right behind the baby boomers, is the smallest of the four. So now we know before getting someone with experience was easy. Now we have to grow people into those jobs because we don't have enough. Sorry, my dog. We have to grow people into those jobs because we don't have enough people that have the skills. And so the high, hold on. Guys, listen, this is the problem with working from home. Oh. So the problem now is with people, the people that have the Generation Xers should have no problem, in my opinion. If they have a good brand, they have a good resume, getting jobs, it should be easy because companies are dying for people that have experience. It's the struggle of growing people. And getting them to understand that they're just because they're beginning a manager's role doesn't mean that they can flip the switch and get a director's job. And that's where our problem is today. We've got kids that are being handed manager's jobs, and they're thinking, well, it's that easy. I should be able to be a director in a year. And it's not. The reason you're getting the manager's jobs is because we need to fill those jobs, and you're going to have to learn on the way. But part of learning is the horizontal versus vertical, which you asked me about earlier. You got to be able to grow both ways. And that's where I think we're going to have challenges. I think the youth of today, they get the initial offer is always so lucrative, but then they feel like that's the way it's going to be forever, and it's not. And I'll tell you what's going to make the Generation Z struggle the most is that they're coming behind the largest generation after baby boomers. And so they're going to run into some major challenges over the next couple of years, especially with the pandemic, because you've got a pretty handsome supply of millennials now. And so they're going to run into the same problem that the Gen Xers had originally, which was, they have to wait for some of these millennials to get out of the way so they can get their way up. But the millennials are going to be the generation, mind you, they're good people. We rely on them today to fill jobs that we would have never filled if we didn't have them. But they're also going to pose a challenge to the preceding workforces because they're going to have to, find a way to weasel their way in.
They are. And, one of the things that I think is interesting as I watch some of this from the side of the business world that I work in is companies certainly were never perfect, but you had people that would do 5, 10, 15, 20 years at a company, to your point on the boomers, that, worked their way up through, understood multiple parts of the business. Often, we talked earlier about challenges, right? They may be moved from logistics to operations to something else to product in the course of their career. So by the time they were senior, they really understood how the business worked. And one of the things I question just with millennials is I see them moving jobs. I don't necessarily see them moving inside the same company and building that foundation.
Well, and it, huh.
Yeah, I'm not trying to be controversial, just,
Well, it's a dangerous topic because I talk to millennials all the time that say that have no company loyalty, right? But here's what I'm going to tell you. It works both ways.
Absolutely.
I think the problem is that before companies didn't have to earn company loyalty. People just were incessantly willing to be loyal, particularly because before they didn't have 20,000 different ways to find a job. Remember, when baby boomers were looking for work, they had to, you know, look in the newspaper or look for an ad or go to a career fair. Now it's much easier, right? So people can easily, you know, find work. So now it's on companies. They've got to put in place programs that are going to incite people to want to stay. But don't give in. When I say don't give in, I say don't make it into we're going to give everybody everything, right? You have to draw a line. Like, you know, companies say, well, we're just going to give them unlimited vacation time and they'll stay. Now, how is that going to help your efficiencies? The number one concern I have right now is that companies are going to give up too much, which is going to lower their productivity and their efficiencies because people are not going to be incentivized to work. And that's what my biggest concern is. If you ask me what my greatest concern in the next 10 years, it's companies realizing that by giving away the farm, they're over giving stuff without getting the actual return on investment. And it's going to cost companies money because they're going to have to fill a job with, that used to be for one, with one person, with two, because productivity is going to go down. And I think that's the most important thing that companies have to remember when they're looking at policies and implementing things and things like that.
That's a really interesting point that I've not considered, because when I look at efficiency, I look at it, okay, tech's enabling efficiency, manufacturing is more efficient, whatever, right? But I hadn't thought about the productivity of workers actually declining.
Yeah. Oh, I guarantee you, over the course of the next 10 years, I guarantee you will see systematically an issue with employees being lazy. And I'll tell you, it's because especially now the pandemic, I hate to say this, and I should be shameful for saying this, may actually help the problem because it's really rattled people, especially people that are younger. Because the older people are, so because of the pandemic, a lot of older people put their retirement on hold, you know, because of the pandemic and what's going on, they've stayed in their jobs to keep. So a lot of time, a lot of companies in course of history, when you have something like a pandemic or a recession, companies hold on to the more experienced people, the people that work hard, and don't as much the younger people that need more handholding, because they don't have the headcount. And so over the last year, I've placed 12 people in their 60s and two guys in their 70s. Now, 5 years ago, you would say, how is that possible? Now it's happening because people know that the guy in his 60s has the mentality that he's gonna work his crap off to get the job done. And the guy in their 20s is gonna want you to give him the farm, but want to work 9 to 5. And during a pandemic or a recession, you can't do that. So I actually think that this pandemic, as sad as it is and as terrible as it is, may actually somewhat correct that issue a little bit. I've even talked to people that have said that they are taking on more and more responsibility because the headcount's not there. And it wasn't like that a year ago. Well, that's because companies will give you a choice. You either do more work or you get cut because we can't afford it. And that's changing the dynamic. So I think it'll help, but I definitely believe that we were on the trajectory where we were going to see a lot of productivity decline. And then complicated with the fact that, again, not to sound political, we were shuttering the doors of people from the other countries. When unemployment is at the lowest level in a generation, the last thing you do is cut your labor force.
Yeah.
And telling people that are on H-1Bs or applying for visas, we don't want you, is the stupidest thing you can do, because the number one thing that you want is people to fill jobs because the unemployment rate's so low and you can't find anybody. And so you're just making it worse. Having a low unemployment rate to zero is not a good thing for anybody.
No, it's not sustainable. Actually, you know, taking it away from American issue, right? Germany is a great example. The birth rates declined over the last 35, 40 years. They don't have enough people to fill the jobs. we could find ourselves in that situation.
Correct. And if we're not making exceptions to allowing, you know, people younger that maybe don't have the experience to train them, or bringing people from outside the country to come in and do work, especially work that, you know, our, you know, millennials sometimes don't want to do, then yeah, you can only automate so much, right? There's certain jobs out there that you just can't automate. And at the end of the day, if you have nobody to fill those jobs, it's going to squeeze the supply chain. And it's going to happen. It's already happening. I did a podcast at the beginning of this pandemic, and literally one of my first podcasts. And I brought a guy who's a supply chain expert on my show. And the first thing I said to him is, our supply chain is going to be in trouble. And we talked about how that was going to happen and why it was going to happen. People think, okay, 32% of restaurants have closed permanently. Well, that sucks for the restaurant business, right? No, it sucks for the paper supply business. It sucks for the food manufacturing companies. It sucks for the drivers that deliver the food. It sucks for the people that make the tables that you sit on in those restaurants. And you can't think so narrowly. And And so it's the same thing when it comes to your resume, right? You know, that's why I tell people, you got to paint a big picture of all the things that you've done. If you write a resume that's narrow, really narrow to one type of job, yeah, you may get that one type of job. But what about the 90% of other jobs you're missing out on because you're writing such a narrow, targeted, focused resume that only speaks to one type of person?
Yeah. Yeah. And to your point on fishing, right? If there's one fish in a big pond, it's harder to hook them.
Right. Okay. Because guess what? There's 20 fishermen.
Yep.
You know, and so how are you, everybody can be, if everybody's fishing with the same type of pole and the same bait, it's now luck. So what happens is, right, this is what's happening today. So this, when unemployment's low, you've got 20 fishermen that think they have the best bait out there, right? And they're fishing for the right fish. And so what do they keep doing? Throw more bait in. And they keep throwing bait in. They finally catch the fish because they threw so much bait in, but then they realize, oh shit, I have no more bait. Mm-hmm. Is one fish going to feed your business? No. It takes a village to feed your business. And so that's what's going to happen, or what was happening, and it still may be happening to our industry, is that you gotta at some point say, okay, I've thrown enough bait out there. You can't make it out to be whoever pays the top dollar gets the fish. Because I can tell you, there's a company, won't say who, again, try to be politically correct. There's a multi-billion dollar company. One of the most richest men in the world is running it. And he pays their people tremendous amounts of money, but it's a terrible place to work. You work 7 days a week, blood, sweat, and tears. The average person that's married, if they're there for 3 to 5 years, they get divorced. Okay?
Yeah.
There's a balance, right? He has no problem with retention rates because he can easily fill his jobs because he throws all the bait in the world out there and everybody eats it. Okay? Sometimes the guy with the most bait, they may not be the right place to go. So just remember that. Just because a company pays more money doesn't mean they're a better company. You got to look at the big picture of things. And I think a lot of times people forget that. You know, a lot of times people forget that. And that goes back to the whole work-life balance thing. You know, how do you balance better? You know, all that stuff. It's you got to look at the big picture. And it's the same thing. It's with resumes or companies. You got to look at the big picture. You got to look at not just one element, that 10%, but the whole 100%. That's what's going to define how successful a person would be to the company and the company would be to the person.
You know, that's an interesting thought, because just because they're throwing the most money, there might be a reason for that. And as a coin operated person that I am, sometimes that's a warning sign, right? If somebody's willing to overpay in any sense, there's a reason. Are they desperate and need it? Is that how they're getting it, right? Is their credit bad? If you're a finance guy, I only know all my friends in finance, right? If somebody's willing to pay above market, there is a reason.
I will tell you, I'll give you a hint, okay? On a P&L, one part of a P&L is your labor costs.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how you use that labor cost can be you work five people 40 hours a week, or you work three people 70 hours a week. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, you're still paying the same costs. The difference is the naive people that don't realize that their hourly rate is lower than the company that makes you work 45 hours a week. So you have to figure out what the value is there. Is it worth the money, or is it worth living life?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a hard one, because as we hinted at earlier, that is something I struggle with, right? I will continually work and work and work. So I'm the wrong guy to give advice there. I always tell people, don't do what I do. It's not healthy. It's not good. Most people don't last.
Well, I'm the same way. But I can tell you that I could have worked half as much and made average. And so I just did it because I wanted to retire young and just enjoy life. I just worked my brains out. But I can tell you that I could have easily worked half as much and still made decent money and worked until I was 65. And so, but again, that's because I was working smarter. Okay. Yeah. I just decided to work smarter and hard, bank it, and then hit the ripcord early. But if you have a family and you want to see your kids grow up, we call it a marathon, not a sprint. Don't take off more than you can chew and never see your kids grow up. And that's what a lot of people do, is they'll take on more and more and more because they want to grow faster, or they want to, you know, and I get it. You have to pay your bills. But at the end of the day, you know, if you could pay your bills is one thing, but having to overachieve constantly or overdo yourself and never get to be able to live life. I mean, people have died never living life. I mean, do you want to die and never live life? I mean, and that's something I tell people all the time. I mean, what made my decision change this year, you know, is a friend of mine who was, you know, 39 years old, had a heart attack, and his doctor said, you had a heart attack, not because you have a heart problem, because you're working yourself to death. You have a choice. You either get a different job, change your lifestyle, or in a year, I'll be burying you. Make a choice. There's a book. I'm going to tell you, this is not even my book. There's a book. If anybody out there is working their life to death and don't balance, and they're spending all their money, or they're buying all fancy things and just making as much as they can just to spend it all just as fast, there's a book out there called The Monk That Owned a Ferrari. It's a book about this guy who was a lawyer and who had a heart attack, and he woke up in the hospital room and there was nobody around him because he didn't have family, he didn't have friends, because all he cared about was work. And then this monk walked into the room and said, you're not realizing the meaning of life. Is this what you want, to die with no friends, no family, nothing around you? And so it's an interesting book. You have to read it. It takes you through this journey that makes you realize that you can sprint to the finish line, but when you get there, you may have a heart attack, or you can make it a marathon, get there in an average amount of time, but then after you're done, enjoy the fruits of your labor. And a lot of time people forget about that stuff.
Yeah. In so much of that, you get caught up in the corporate culture, right? What we're doing is special, important. It's this, it's that, you know, so that's a hard thing.
Find a different corporate culture. Just because they have a big name doesn't mean they're better company.
Yeah. Yeah. I was actually on a trip 18 months ago before this whole thing started. And there was a guy who was retired from a large financial institution. He'd done very, very well. you know, several, you know, relationships through his adult life because the price was his work was everything. And he retired. He came back 6 months later. Nobody remembered who he was because they had reorged the office, changed things on floors, knocked down the office he sat in for 20 years. So it was the biggest realization he ever had was that he was, no matter how much they paid him, he was just a cog in the machine.
Absolutely. You know, I'm going to tell you, I'm that guy.
Yeah.
I spent 21 years being the top recruiter at my company. And a very, very dear friend of mine came to me and said, Michael, when you leave, after 6 months, do you think anybody will really care that you're gone? And I realized, no, they won't.
Yeah.
And so I made the decision, it's time for me to be me and enjoy the things that I want to do and do it for myself. Because I know that once I'm gone, I don't want to be remembered as just the guy that was a great biller and then he disappeared and there's nothing else to him. I want to be known for other things, giving back to the community, you know, being a great leader, you know, participating in events, you know, doing other things in my life other than just work. And if someone asks you today, how would you describe yourself out of work, and you stutter, then you're working too much. This is a total, now we're going into a totally different podcast.
We are, but I'm seeing myself at 29 years old standing at a magazine stand at LaGuardia. And I tell the story often to young people, right? I had come up in a company, it had been acquired. Right. I wasn't the owner, so I certainly wasn't able to cash out. And I'm standing there going, new corporate ownership. You know, my work-life balance got worse. I'm standing in a magazine shop and I had no interest in the world outside of my job, right? I used to play music. I used to like sports. I used to do this. I used to do that. And I stood there and stared at it all blankly and realized there was a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, my final thing on this topic is simple. Again, when you die, okay, and someone's putting your headstone together and they're putting together your funeral and someone stands in front of the room and speaks about you, tell me what they'll say. And if the only thing that they're going to say is that he worked a lot, you got yourself a problem.
Yeah.
And understand that time may come sooner than you want if you keep going in that direction.
Yeah. Yeah. People don't, I think it's, people don't recognize how often things happen to their friends, you know, mid-career, even before the midpoint of a career, that are just tragic.
It's really sad, actually. Yeah, and again, we get so caught up in our own stuff that we don't even realize it, you know? And now with Facebook and all this virtual stuff, when was the last time? Now, I'm guilty of this. I'm sure there's going to be friends of mine that say, Michael, you don't call me. When was the last time, right, that you picked up the phone and called your friend versus texted them?
Yeah, probably on that friend's birthday for me personally.
Right.
Yeah. 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 That's, you talk about a whole different topic, right? I did the whole digital detox, whatever you want to call it. And I still use it for my business and I'm very open about that. But personally, I've stopped using it, right? I just am like, there was no joy there for me. There were no victory laps. It just felt like another set of obligations on social media.
Now, unfortunately, with the pandemic, we have to socially distance. But at the end of the day, you know what? It's okay. I mean, but it still beats, you know, never talking to a person.
Absolutely.
I mean, that engagement is so much more important. You know, when people hire me, I've had people want to hire me and never talk to me on the phone. And I'll tell them, no, I'm sorry. I've got to be able to discuss it with you on the phone. I want to understand who you are. I want to feel you, not just read about you. And they're like, okay. And when I get on the phone, they're like, I want to hire you. I'm like, it doesn't matter. I want to ask you some questions, get to know you, understand you. That's how it should be. You know, that's how you really know, understand somebody. And it's the same thing with, you know, casual conversations or even your boss. You know, the whole thing is you never send an email, you pick up the phone.
Yep.
1000% true.
Yep.
Because the email never is read right. They'll email you back saying something that you'll take wrong. And if you picked up the phone, it would have been a 5-minute solution.
Yeah. And the other thing I found is if you're CC'd on that email and you call the person that sent it, they stop CCing you on things you don't need.
Right. Right. Because it wasn't for you to say anything. It was just for you to be aware of, right?
Exactly. I love that. Right. That's a yeah. Good one. I did it that. Years ago. It worked great. My inbox dropped by 90% because people learned that if they CC'd me, I'd call and ask questions. They just stopped sending me things I didn't need.
That's interesting. I love it. Absolutely love it.
What else should I have asked you that we didn't cover here today?
Oh my God. That's a loaded question.
It is. I'm letting you pick the direction, man.
You know, what should he? I don't know. I mean, I think we covered a lot. I mean, I think I'm going to tell you, you know, I hear this from people all the time. And this is true for me as well. And I can tell you, I've learned a lot in life about this. It's all about the journey, not about the destination. You know, in life, we focus so much on the end game and not enough on how we get there. And in so many ways that impacts our life, right? It's from work, being able to, like, again, you know, guy gives you something to put together and hands you a book. You know, for me, what's the quickest way to, for me, logically, if I want to get it done, I'll just read the book and go follow the instructions because whoever wrote it, you know, they gave it, they made it so it'll get me to the end game. But maybe it'll be fun to try to figure it out. Maybe it'll be enjoyable to put those pieces together. Maybe I'll learn ways to do it that they didn't even know. You know, maybe I'll find ways to do it faster, better, stronger, easier, you know, more logically. Do you know that I toyed with things all my life. And when I learn to do something that may actually help other people, I'll call up a company and say, listen, I know you wrote to do this in the instructions, but I actually did it this way and it actually is better. Have you ever done that? Have you ever gone into a business and seen the way they're doing something and thought, God, that's so inefficient? You know, 99% of people walk out the door saying, wow, that's totally an inefficient operation. I'm the guy that calls up the owner and says, listen, I don't care. You can do whatever you want. But I can tell you right now, this is a problem. And this is why you should think about changing it.
That's actually awesome. Most people who do that would charge for it and not be their customers looking for a better way or somebody who just thought about it.
Sorry about that. Yeah, you're right. But at the end of the day, I mean, listen, I don't have time to solve everybody's problems, right? And also, it helps your experience as well, okay? So yeah, I'll tell him how to fix it, but it also means that maybe next time when I go visit that place, it'll be running even more efficiently, you know?
Right.
The process will be better. But I can tell you, like in customer, I'll tell you, I love it when candidates, when I call up an applicant and tell them, I'm going to be completely honest with you. I never sugarcoat. I'll tell you exactly what you need to hear. And then when you tell them what's wrong, they hang up the phone on you or they get mad. Well, yeah. Take a deep breath and think about it for a second. If I'm telling you what's wrong and I'm telling you how to solve your problem, I'm not the bad guy. Because I'm just trying to help you.
Yeah.
If anything, you should be happy that I said something.
Yeah, because you can't fix it if you don't know.
How many times have you seen a resume where somebody misspelled the word manager and, oh, I don't have time to let them know? Well, I'll tell you, I had a guy who misspelled his title, the word manager, was the first thing on his resume. It was in the summer. It was the top of his resume where he said he was a manufacturing operations manager and he spelled it Manger, M-A-N-G-E-R. And the reason why manger is a word. And so it's the most commonly misspelled word, by the way, anybody wants to know. The number one commonly misspelled word on a resume is manager. just FYI, because manger's a word. And I called him up and I was talking to him. I said, hey, by the way, you need to fix the fact you spelled manager wrong. He goes, what? I says, what's wrong? He says, I sent out this resume like 200 times. I'm like, yeah, that sucks. I mean, that means that 199 people haven't helped you.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, at the end of the day, don't get mad at me.
No.
You have a typo. Listen, I'm letting you know. Appreciate those things. And it's the same thing vice versa. You know, it's, I love those people that say they're afraid to go tell their manager about something because they're afraid the manager is going to be mad at them. But if you frame it right, they realize that you're going to save them money, or they're going to save them time, or they're going to make their bonus be better because they're going to be more efficient. So you got to frame it right, right? You know, you don't want to go in and say, well, you're doing it wrong. But at the end of the day, you go in and say, listen, I was thinking about something. I might have a way to make this work better. Would you like my thoughts? Yeah, of course. Yeah, I want to hear how it can be done better. I mean, yeah. It's working. It's working fine right now, right? But I think I might have a way to make it work even better, which will result in more money in our pocket. Sure. Tell me about it. It's all how about you approach things.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know very many managers that would say, oh, no, I don't want to make more money. Oh, no, I don't want it to be better. But if you walk in the door and say, you're doing it wrong, what do you think my response is going to be? Who are you to tell me I'm doing it wrong?
Yeah.
So it's all about delivery. It's the same thing with a resume. It's all about delivery. Everybody wants to blame it on their work history, their job titles, their lack thereof. I don't have a degree. It's all bogus. It's all about delivery.
Yeah.
You don't have a good delivery, you're not getting people to see the value.
Yeah, it's back to the deconstructed salad, right?
Right.
You pay extra for it to be laid out like that.
But you also realize the value once you see all the things that go into it.
Very true.
I'll tell you a quick story. I bought a boat. And I've never seen boats being manufactured. And I've never seen the process. And I told the guy, I says, I will buy this boat on the agreed upon price on one condition. And I want to be signed into the contract. He says, what's that? I want to tour the facility. I want to see it being built. And he's like, why? I'm like, because I want to see why I'm paying so much money for it. And so he said, sure. Contacted the corporate office, got me a tour. I'll tell you what, I walked the floor, toured the facility, and watched all the things that went into making that boat. And when I left, I said to myself, you know what? It's worth every penny. A lot of times we don't realize that, you know, just because something's expensive, if you can create the value by showing people the value, then they'll pay the extra price.
So absolutely true.
And again, that goes on to delivery. Delivery, delivery, delivery. 1000% delivery. You know, I love people to say, how did you get that guy? I got a guy, he was making 110. He got a job making 180. How is that possible? Because his resume was crap before and nobody could see what value he had. So what did we do? We created value. That's how he got a raise. He got a raise because people saw that they could spend $70,000 more a year on this guy to save $1 million. Oh, I'm going to put the $70,000 in.
Yeah, it's a no-brainer. It's easy math.
If you can create that value, if you present those solutions, companies will pay you whatever you want.
That's a great one. So, Michael, thank you for being here. I really appreciate you taking the time and being on the show.
Absolutely. Listen, anytime you ever want me on the show, anytime one of your listeners needs help, you know, reach out to me on my email. I know you'll have it on your podcast notes. I'd be glad to even just do a quick email with somebody or quick call just to help them out. You know, not a problem.
If you didn't get massive value from what Michael shared, in your job search, you missed the point. He's a genuine guy. He's true to his offer. If you have a need, if you're looking, if you're thinking about upgrading your resume or your personal branding, look, I've met some of his clients, as I alluded to in the first part of the episode. He does great work as a guy who's been a hiring manager. The type of resumes and the type of positioning he puts, if it hit my desk, I'd give it a second look. And more often than not, I'd probably give that person an opportunity for a conversation. So I can't endorse him enough. We're going to have him back on. We hope you love him. So we're starting to do some mega episodes. And the first one will be to kick off Q2, focused on sales. We've got three amazing guests lined up on that. But we're also going to do a job search episode in early May with four experts on just getting your ideal job. So if you don't already subscribe, please subscribe, tell your friends, leave us a review on Apple. That helps more people find us and share the message. And check back tomorrow, as tomorrow's episode is Chris Bremer and Tim Cook from Sales Punch. And what they're going to talk about is getting you the right appointments to drive your business. As always, you can find me at timkubiak.com. If you've got a sales problem and a challenge, I help people win their biggest deals. Reach out to me. Let's have a conversation. And I'll see if I can help you too. Thanks for listening.